Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to yet another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, one of the tech doctors, and way out there on the West Coast. I don't think on her surfboard today is Allison Hartley. Allison, how are you?
Party on, dudes. No, I'm doing great. I'm in the swing of the full holiday season now, it being December and all. So everything's great.
Excellent. Got plenty of those new holiday Apple-y gifts to put under your tree for yourself?
Oh, yes. Apple-y and otherwise.
All right. Sounds like a plan. We're going to veer away a little bit from what we've been doing so much of for the last few years, which is talk about Apple stuff. And we're going to talk about electronic braille today. And of course, that relates back to our Apple devices because we connect these electronic braille devices to our phones and use them as braille displays. But we also are going to talk some about these electronic devices as standalone devices because we coincidentally, in the past year, both you and I purchased different refreshable braille devices. And we're going to talk about some of the reasons that we made the choices that we made and how we feel about it some months later. And we're very fortunate to have with us a woman who has just recently purchased one of these braille devices. She's from the IA cast. Her name is Aaliyah Dudley. And Aaliyah, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. Thank you so much for taking some time to be here. Tell us about you, if you will.
Sure. Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. As Robert said, my name is Aaliyah Dudley, and I am a computer information systems major at Louisiana Tech University. I was an animal science major, but decided to switch. Technology was more of my focus. And I currently help record podcasts for a company called iAccessibility. We record several different podcasts. The main one is the IA cast, which we record every week. And we discuss anything and everything related to mainstream and other technologies. We put up last weekend an unboxing of the Braille Note Touch, which is how we got to talking about this particular podcast. But iAccessibility is all over the internet. You can find us at iAccessibility.net and on Twitter at iAccessibility1. We even have a podcast dedicated to guide dog handlers as well. So it's really wide variety of shows that we produce.
And iAccessibility is also part of the same organization that produces a number of iOS apps. Isn't that correct?
Correct. Our founder, Michael Dowies, has built several apps, including Start Speaking for iOS, which reads the content of your keyboard aloud in a customizable voice, uses your system voice. We also produce iAccessibility, which is an app dedicated to displaying all of our content on our website, and VO Starter, which is a voiceover tutorial app that is being updated. And we are currently doing a complete rewrite and overhaul of that app.
Oh, I'm so glad because I remember using it back in the day. I was already pretty well-versed in voiceover, but it was a great app.
Yeah, we're rewriting it for iOS 11. Oh, we're great. Cleaning it up, making it more easily readable and understandable. We're doing some things to kind of make it a little more shiny, as it were.
Glad you're here. And turns out that I had listened to that unboxing of the Braille Note Touch podcast that you did, and I thought, wow, you know, I have a Braille Sense Polaris, and Allison has the Vario Ultra, and now you have the Braille Note Touch. So perhaps it would make sense for us to get together and talk about all three of these devices, because I would think that these are three of the more popular, more well-known Braille devices that are currently available. Of course, there are others, and we're not going to be able to cover them all, but at least give people an idea of what these three are about, what we like about them, what we are not so crazy about them, and how they operate. So would a reasonable place to start maybe just to for each of us to take a few moments and describe these devices? I don't know who wants to go first.
I can.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the Braille Note Touch is manufactured by Humanware. For those who don't know, it's the latest in the line of products and is significantly updated from the Braille Note Apex. The first thing that you'll really notice about this is that it's heavier than the Braille Note Apex by a good bit because it is a fully functioning tablet as well. So the heaviest part of the device is the touchscreen that lies underneath the Braille keyboard, allowing the user to flip the Braille keyboard back and use a method called Touch Braille to Braille only on the touchscreen. This particular unit that I have is a 32-cell unit. On the front edge, you have four thumb keys, which are the traditional buttons that HumanWare has used in its Braille Note line. You also have a back key, a home key, and a menu key on the front. On the left side, you have volume buttons, the lock or power button, and a micro USB port used for charging and connecting to the computer. On the back side, there is a USB port, an SD card slot, and an HDMI port. There's also a port for connecting the Braille keyboard. I believe that's a proprietary port. And on the right side, you have a microphone jack, a headphone jack, and an action button, which performs different functions depending on the app that you're in. It could be a play pause key, for example, in Victor Reader. It is running Android KitKat, which is a little depressing. It does have a camera on the bottom side. I neglected to mention that.
Well, let me briefly describe the HIMSS BrailleSense Polaris, because I think it's rather different in a lot of respects from the Braille Note Touch. So interestingly, you were talking about how the Braille Note Touch is a lot heavier than its predecessor. Well, the BrailleSense Polaris is a lot thinner and a lot lighter than the BrailleSense U2. The BrailleSense Polaris is almost as thin as an iPad. I was surprised at how thin it was when I took it out of the box. I didn't really think at first that was the thing I was touching was the actual device. It was so thin. It does have a keyboard on the top of it, and the keyboard is by far the thing that sticks up the highest on the machine. The rest of it is pretty flat. The Braille display is on the very front, and this one is also a 32-cell display. There are cursor routing keys just above the display, and there's a nice dot on every fifth cursor routing key. It's actually on built onto the key itself, which makes it really easy to locate one of your cursor routing buttons. This is hardware that's very much to my liking. It's very sleek. It's a plastic, but I think it's one of Johnny Ive's unapologetically plastic, because it's a nice plastic. and so it's really nice feeling hardware. Also, on the top of the unit, we have HIMSS traditional scroll up and scroll down buttons. There are two on the left end of the machine and two on the right end of the machine, and these are the buttons that you use to pan the display. We have the four function buttons that HIMSS has included on their Braille products for a long time now, but they also added a control key and an alt key, a control key just to the left of the spacebar, an alt to the right of the spacebar. And those keys are used mostly to work with Android apps, although honestly haven't seen a lot of apps that really take advantage of those supposed shortcut keys, but they're there. Then we have the standard Braille keyboard. The keyboard on this unit is very nice. It's very quiet, and the display is very nice and very quiet, but HIMSS has become known for that over the years. At the very top of the unit, toward the back, if it's sitting on your lap, there is an LCD display, and this display lets a sighted person see what's being displayed on the Braille display. There are two pretty good size stereo speakers on either end of the top of the Polaris, and one thing that the Polaris has is really good sound. It has really good audio. Not only is it good audio for listening to things, but it records really nice audio. It has two stereo microphones built into it, and they really took care to to tweak this audio system so that it records well and plays back well. There are two volume buttons on the left end of the machine. Just behind those, there's a headphone jack and a microphone jack, plug in a stereo microphone. There's a USB port behind that, which is a standard USB port for plugging in thumb drives. On the back of the unit, there's an HDMI port so that you can plug the Polaris into an HDMI projector or monitor. And when you do that, everything that is on the Polaris shows up on the screen. And it's really nice to be able to do that. For example, I was at MacStock doing a presentation this summer, and I was able to plug the Polaris into the projector there, and so the audience could see not only what I was reading on the Braille display, but the Polaris also does a translation back into regular text and puts that on the screen as well.
Oh, neat.
So it was really nice for the audience to be able to literally follow along with me as I went through a few of the menus and showed them how, you know, you do a little bit of word processing and things like that. Also on the back of this unit, we have the place where you plug in the charger. HIMS uses the same battery system and charging system that they've used in all their products for a very long time. On the right side of the unit, there's an SD card slot, and there's a USB port that similar to what you were talking about on the Braille Note Touch, that lets you plug in a cable if you want to connect this device to a computer, or you can also charge the battery through this port. This one is running Android Lollipop, so just the next thing after KitKat, I guess, if they went by the alphabet, which I think they did.
Yes.
And so that's kind of a basic description of this unit. Alice, what's the Vario look like?
Well, the Vario Ultra is really nice. It's very thin. It's a standard feeling sort of width and length for a 40 cell Braille display. As we'll find out, it does a bit more. It's considered in the category of a smart Braille display. And I like to use it in the leather case that it comes with. It fits very nicely in the case, and the top flips back, and you can sit it nicely on your lap and use it. It feels very much like using the note takers of old when you do it that way. Along the left side of the Vario Ultra, you have a regular USB port for connecting a USB stick for either opening files or updating the firmware. You've got a micro USB port for charging or connecting to the computer. You've got a switch that switches you between Braille display mode and note taker mode. And you've also got a lock switch. Along the top of the Vario Ultra, you've got, of course, your line of Braille cells with cursor routing keys above it. The Braille quality is really amazing on the Vario Ultra. You've got the standard 8 keys for Braille input, and also you have a B9, which is a menu, and B10, which is uses a space bar, although they can be switched to the left and to the right underneath the Braille keyboard on the bottom of the unit. In between B9 and B10, you've got the Navi stick, which is a joystick for not only moving through documents and menu items, but also for confirming. It has an OK in the middle. And then you have the system buttons for performing various functions on the Braille display that are to the left and to the right, respectively, of the B9 and B0. You've got system 1 and system 2 to the left, S3 and S4 to the right. And then along the outermost ends of the Braille display, you've got the display keys, which are D1 through D6. D1, 2, and 3 are along the left, and D4, 5, and 6 are along the right. Those are used for not only navigating with the display, but also performing various commands as well. The advantage of all the buttons on here is that there are a ton of different commands that allow you to use this display pretty powerfully. But one of the drawbacks is also that there's a lot of commands to memorize. But BOM has a great manual for the Vario Ultra for referring back. And there's also a really nice audio tutorial through Mystic Access as well. On the right-hand side, there's the little snap for the case. Just underneath that is the power button. Like most note takers, you can either turn the Vario Ultra fully on or off, or take it in and out of standby mode. It's very, very nice to hold and use. It fits nicely in my big purse. It's very nice metal and plastic construction. So it's built like a tank. That being said, like I said, I still keep it in the case all the time just for added protection because it is going in and out of my purse all the time. And oh, and also on the left and right hand bottom corners are little attachment points with strings for the strap that you hook the case in, and then you can have it over your shoulder, which is another nice way to carry it.
Okay, so it sounds like it comes with a really nice case, and that's one thing that has been of interest to me over the years. I really worry about these very expensive devices and how we're going to keep them safe. And
oh, yeah.
The Polaris, I actually like the case that comes with it. It's completely a minimalist case. There are no pockets. There's no place to put anything other than the unit itself. And it seems odd to describe it this way, but it's made of something sort of like a hard rubber. It kind of reminds me of how some of those really, you know, hard rubber balls feel that I used to play with when I was a kid. And you would think, yuck, why would you want that? But actually, I like it. It seems to provide a lot of protection for the unit. A few people complain because some of the ports aren't covered on the sides, but it actually is not a case that I would go out and try to replace with an executive products case, which I've done with most of my other HIMS devices. But the case, and it has a magnetic closure, so it's silent. It's really quite functional, honestly. I like it quite a bit, and I think it provides a fair amount of protection for the unit. Aaliyah, what does the Braille Note come with?
The Braille Note's case seems to be sort of nylon. It's very slick. And that's only the top part. That's the interesting thing about the Braille Note Touch case. It has a magnetic closure on the front, left, and right sides. So theoretically, you could just flip up the left side, for example, to change your volume if it was in the case. It has a Velcro pocket on the back for flash drives. And I slid my iPhone 7 Plus in there the other day to carry it with me. It has two D-ring attachments, plastic D-ring attachments on the left and right sides for attaching the strap. And the downside to this case is that the keyboard is attached to it. So you take the thing out of the case, you don't get the keyboard. I think that's a little depressing. But all in all, it's a fair case. It comes pre-attached to the unit because it's a little difficult to put on.
So is the point that you, when you take it out of the case, you use it then with the touch screen, use it as a touch screen device?
Right. You would use it with touch braille. And the thing about touch braille is that you can use it in the menus, which is really very interesting. You don't just use it in documents. You can use it to navigate the menus.
Oh,
so I can place all 10 fingers on the screen and it will calibrate. And then I can use my thumb and then my right index finger to do something like a space with .4. And it will still work, which is really interesting the way they've implemented that.
That is. Now, when you're doing touch braille and you're brailing along, when I'm doing braille screen input, for example, on my phone, I do have it set to echo the characters and words that I'm typing. Do you find that you still have to do that when you're doing touch braille on the Braille Note Touch, or do you find that you can just as easily look down at the braille display and see what you're inputting just to avoid mistakes?
That is actually the tricky part. And I have used touch braille in class with speech off, but the reality is that it needs recalibrated every so often. And if you slide your hand off the braille display to read what you've typed, it can mess it up when you put your hand back. Now, the thing with the calibration is there's a vibration motor in the device where it gives a long vibration if it can't understand what you're typing. And at that point, you place all 10 fingers on the screen and it will give a short vibration and you will be able to resume touch braille. But it's a little quirky.
Interesting.
So, wow, I hadn't really thought of this, but touch braille is not that easy to use if you're having to also read what's on the display.
Yeah, I was told by an instructor that I would eventually be able to use the unit without a keyboard case. I don't find that that's true, despite the fact that if you listen to it typing, this keyboard's really loud. It kind of sounds like the Braille Note Apex used to. But I find that I use it and I'm a lot faster with it because I can drop my fingers down to the Braille display, jump back up to the keyboard, and continue typing.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the idea of the touch screen for Braille on the device is kind of cool in some respects, but it's a little quirky in other ways.
I'm a bit mixed. I've used it, but not for long periods of time.
So they did something, in my opinion, even a little bit more bizarre on the Polaris. It doesn't have a touch screen, but between the Braille cells on the Braille display and the cursor routing keys, there's a little space and there's a strip there that's a touch area where you can do gestures and double taps to start apps and do things sort of similar to what we do on our iOS devices, except that it's this tiny strip that you can barely fit two fingers in. So you're limited to a flicking motion, or kind of a, it really is more of a, like a sliding motion, which would be sort of like a flick. And some of the gestures they've come up with do involve using two fingers. But for the life of me, I can't figure out why or how this little touch strip is really that useful. I don't see what the point of it is. So theoretically, I guess in a sense, you know, the Polaris does sort of have a touch interface, but it's unusual. Talk a little bit about the Vario interface, Allison. You were saying that there's a huge amount of flexibility, but it's complicated.
It just takes some finger gymnastics depending on the types of functions that you want to perform. When you're going through the menus, it shows you the different key combinations. Now, I have a Mac, so I'm used to doing crazy key combinations. But if you don't do something for a while, you have to go back, I find, and look up the key combinations. But I like it for the things that I bought it for, which were basic note-taking and for reading of files and for use on my devices via Bluetooth. I've been happy with it. I've been really happy with the Vario Ultra. I do wish sometimes that it had a browser or even speech, or that sometimes I could just drop a file in via Dropbox rather than hooking up a USB stick. But it's been a good purchase. I use it a lot for things like when I have to write down something, like on a call with customer service and they give me a confirmation number or something, I can just go right into the word processor, write that down. I've been using it for reading notes for presentations for work. I love it for that. I've got everything just right there. I like it for note taking because the keys are a little clicky, but they're not as clicky, for example, as the keys on the Braille Note Touch. They're nice, small keys that don't take a lot of effort to press. I have small hands, so that really works out for me. I've not really dealt much with the Excel viewer, but for the things that I want it to do, it does those things. Jeremy and I have been attempting to share the Vario Ultra between two very busy, active blind people, and that doesn't really lend itself as much to marital harmony as you might think.
You got 20 cells apiece.
Right. His and her cells, yes. So I am here partially to you know, talk about the product that I like, but also to find out about you guys' product, because I want to buy a second device for us. But from the things I'm hearing, I might be trying to see if I can get a second Vario, to be honest with you. Because for the things that we want to do with it, it sounds like it might still be the best solution for us.
Well, we don't know any details about what's going to happen, but I think we've all seen that the German parent company is struggling, and we don't really know what the future at this point of the Vario is going to be, right?
Right. Baum USA is still up and running. The Baum company in Germany has filed for bankruptcy. I happen to know that when that happens, they get a lot of government support to help try to get them back on their feet. So I'm remaining hopeful that they might continue to exist and we might continue to see updates for Vario. I may hold off, honestly, on buying anything new until you know, some of the things that you've mentioned about the Polaris, because that might be what we go for if I don't go for this, for another Vario, are fixed.
Yeah, your point's well taken. All these devices, I think, will be pretty clear by the time we're done with this podcast, really do have some pretty exciting pros, but also some pretty serious drawback. Do I understand with the Vario, it's not like a Braille Note Touch or a Polaris in the sense that it doesn't have all these built-in applications, word processors, web browsers, Wi-Fi, and all that, but it does have some of that capability, right? I mean, you are able to take notes and do some things like
that. You are able to take notes. It has a calculator. It has timers and alarms. You're actually able in the word processor to load in PowerPoint documents, which is nice because there's no more having to convert them to RTF to read them. But you are limited because it doesn't have any internet connection or anything. You are limited to the functions that are built into that particular firmware update. So you are limited to what's there in the firmware, just like you are with any other piece of technology. But no, it doesn't have a Wi-Fi chip or anything like that. So it would be very unlikely without a major hardware revision that there would be anything like a web browser. And like I say, there's no speech. And as much as I like Braille only, there are times for things like web browsing that speech is a little bit faster, at least until I get to the long form article or something that I want to read. And then I do still like to read it with Braille. And that's where, for me, having it in Braille display mode with my various computers and my iPhone is great. And being able to switch quickly between different devices with Bluetooth, that was the major selling point for me.
You find that works well?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Certainly the Braille Sense Polaris, and you'll have to speak to the Braille Note Touch, Aaliyah, but I think both of them offer a capability of connecting to other, like, iOS devices. But the Polaris, you have to put it into a terminal mode, which is not difficult to do. And actually, when you do that, it works well connected to my iPhone. It even has some advantages. It has kind of a buffering capability that lets you write and edit something on the Braille display before you actually send it to the iOS device. You can get your Braille just right before you send your text over if you want to do that or something like that. But the point is, these devices do connect to the iOS devices, and I assume that's also true for the Braille Note Touch, right?
Correct. It will connect. However, I have had some serious issue in the past with holding a Bluetooth connection to my phone with something else connected, like my AirPods. It will not sometimes play nice, and the Braille Note likes to steal the Bluetooth, and I've had to completely disconnect the Braille Note from my phone and then repair my AirPods to solve the problem at one point.
Wow, so it's pretty invasive in that sense.
Yeah, I haven't tried reconnecting the Touch to my phone since that day that happened, simply because of that issue.
I do wonder whether or not it will work any better with iOS 11.2, which just came out yesterday, because a lot of Braille stuff was worked on.
It was, but I was running the beta at the time and it didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay,
so there was no magic answer there, at least not from the beta anyway. Allison, the Vario, it runs some version of Windows CE, right?
Yes, yes. I have not found that to be an issue. I find that it's nice and snappy. I know that Windows CE is freakishly old.
Yeah, but I always thought it wouldn't matter much for the Vario because you weren't trying to use a web browser.
Right, exactly. So for the things that it needs to do, it's got plenty of power.
But it does also kind of highlight back to the point that even though you're pleased with what it does, you sometimes kind of wish it was a device that did more, that it did connect to the internet.
Yeah, there are times when I wanted to just look up something quickly and I had my Vario in my lap and I wasn't necessarily near any of my other devices. And I was like, gosh, I wish I could just pull up Google on this thing real quick, you know?
Yeah, it's right there. And every other device that you use in your household can pull up Google. So why not? Mm-hmm. Why not? I can understand how it would feel that way.
Yeah.
What they did with the Polaris to try to, I guess, make it a Swiss Army knife in a sense. Hims made a decision that they were going to essentially offer people both the same kinds of custom apps for the major functions like word processing, email, web browsing, schedule managing, things like that. So you have those on the Polaris, but then you also have the Wild Wild West of Android, where you can download apps from the Google Play Store and run those apps on the Polaris. And so the hope was that you ended up with the best of both worlds. You had a device that could essentially do most of what the U2 could do by either using a custom designed HIMSS app or by grabbing something from the Google Play Store. And this has been a really mixed bag for me with the Polaris for a couple reasons. I thought with a fast mobile processor, 3 gigs of RAM, which is I think the same amount that's in the iPhone 10, which is what the Polaris has got 64 gigs of flash storage. I thought, you know, wow, this device is going to scream. It's going to be as fast as my iPhone. But it turns out that for whatever reason, it's not. The web browser is fairly slow to load pages. In a lot of cases, as slow or slower than U2, which was running Windows CE, which is hard to understand, but that's been my experience of it. And there are problems with the browser where sometimes a button or a link, you press enter on it, it just won't activate. And sometimes an edit box won't show up on a page where you need to fill in an email address to log in. These are things that HIMSS is working on, but they have to be fixed before the Polaris will really be up to where in some ways the U2 was as far as web browsing. Now, it has some real advantages over the U2. It'll open tons more sites than the U2 would ever open because it was running Windows Internet Explorer 6. That's as high as it could go because of Windows CE. The biggest issue for me right now is the built-in word processor on the Polaris. It does a great job of opening files. I mean, you can read BRF files and it keeps your place. You can read Word files. You can read PDFs. It does a great job on the PDFs that I've had to use lately. It is a first class, fast, responsive file reader. And you can write in the word processor and you can write all day long. But if you decide to edit what you've written, if you decide to start inserting, deleting, cutting, pasting, using the cursor router keys to move the cursor to different parts of your document, very, very often the Polaris corrupts the data.
Oh, my.
And so you might end up with characters that you didn't actually put in the file or characters missing from the file that you actually did put into the file. HIMSS, I know, is working really, really hard on, and they have engineers working on this. I've communicated with them, and I know they are. They are desperately trying to get to the bottom of this issue. But how can you have a what they call a note taker, a note taking device with a flaky word processor?
Yeah, that's a big problem.
It's a big problem. I am confident that HIMSS is going to do their best to get to the bottom of this and solve this problem. They've always been really good about fixing their bugs and taking care of their software, but this is a serious issue right now. The Polaris has its own screen reader built into it for Android, and you can download and install apps from the Google Play Store, but you have to sort of mainly use the tab key to tab around in the apps to get to the button that you need to press to make the audio play or to do whatever you're trying to do in the app. I'm honestly faster and more efficient on the iPhone touchscreen than I am at tabbing around apps. And the other problem is they've got problems with some of the apps not working quite like they should. For example, I'm a huge Audible fan. And the Audible app you can download for the Polaris from the Google Play Store. You can see your library. You can install books just fine. And you can read the books fine. But you cannot speed up the reading because the slider control that controls the speed, for some reason, doesn't change using the commands on the Polaris inside the Audible app. And so this is not completely new for Audible. I mean, we struggled for years to get everything working as well as it does now on the Audible app for iOS, right? I mean, it hasn't always worked well. It's really cool to be able to use these apps in a Braille interface, and to sit there silently and work with various things is terrific. And I use the Polaris all the time in various ways at work to keep track of information in meetings and things like that. And of course, it works fine if I use it connected to my iPhone and do word processing that way. I'm just really hopeful that we're going to see huge progress in the stabilization and completion of this work that is going to have to be done to make the Polaris a really first-class Android Braille device. I'd love to hear you talk some, if you don't mind, Aaliyah, about what your experience has been with the built-in apps and Android apps on the Braille Note Touch.
The Braille Note Touch, I think, is similar to the Polaris in that it has both built-in apps and it also has the Google suite of apps built in. I think that's a requirement for being a certified tablet. And Humanware does make a claim that the Touch is the world's first Android certified Braille tablet. So you have, for example, Keymail, which is Humanware's email alternative, and you also have Gmail stuck in your all applications folder, which brings us to the first gripe of mine, is that you cannot rearrange apps and put different ones on the main menu. And I confirmed that with a Humanware representative because I was annoyed. I was like, I don't like Keymail. I want an email app that supports threading, that supports multiple message selection and does it fairly quickly and allows me to manage my email how I want. Well, I haven't yet found one that works with the Touch that supports that. But if I had, I wanted to move it to the main menu in place of Keymail. Well, I can't do that. And that's very frustrating to me. One thing that's really nice about working with third-party apps on the Touch is that you can turn off Touch Braille and use the touch screen of the device as you would an Android tablet with TalkBack. The screen reader built-in is not TalkBack. The gestures, I'm pretty sure, are almost exactly the same. You can explore the screen and use Explore by Touch rather than needing to use the Braille display all the time. But again, something mainly useful was speech. If I needed that app in class, it'd be a little interesting to keep my left hand on the Braille display and my right hand using touch gestures. Not as bad as using touch Braille and dropping my hands down, but close. And the main reason I bought the Touch as opposed to the Polaris was the math support. And I find that, for example, I haven't delved really into KeyMath yet, which is the application meant to support writing in math. I tend to do a lot of my basic math writing in computer Braille, which is built into Keyword, and you can use that no problem. But I really like what Humanware has done with the calculator. I think they've removed some functionality, or I just haven't found it yet. But they have done that and placed in its place a really nice feature where, for example, on the Braille Note Apex, if you got a result, if you wanted to divide another number by that result, you would have to store the result in memory, type the new number in and the division symbol, and then place the memory into the end of that calculation. You don't have to do that now. In fact, the Touch doesn't have memory support, which is a little frustrating for other uses, but you would place your cursor at the beginning of the number, of the result number, then type the new number and the division symbol or whatever you wanted to do, and press enter. So now you can manipulate the number and you can change things using the cursor and different things like that, which is really great and something that's been desperately needed. As far as third-party apps go, a lot of them will work fine. I can't say that it's a stellar experience, especially once you get a ton of apps installed. The all applications folder becomes very slow. I've noticed this myself, in that my Braille Note tends to become pretty laggy. Don't try using Facebook. it crashes or is really, really slow. I haven't found that to be a great experience. You can use a lot of different apps. The frustrating thing about having KitKat is that some apps just aren't supported anymore because KitKat doesn't support 64-bit apps. Or you can have 64-bit apps, but usually the devices aren't 64-bit. And a lot of apps are supporting higher levels of operating system right now.
I just want to echo that the Polaris offers similar functionality. It offers all of the access to all of the standard Google apps. HIMSS has said publicly that they can and when they see fit will upgrade the version of Android that the Polaris is running. We don't know, you know, really what all the modifications maybe had to be made to Android to make it work with these Braille devices. So I don't know how hard or easy it is to upgrade the operating system, but it is kind of unfortunate that you start with this brand new device several versions behind, right? I mean, that's frustrating.
It would be to me.
It annoys me a lot. I have an Android tablet based on KitKat that's not my Braille device. It is a Samsung tablet. And it provides a similar experience. Apps are slow. Apps are non-existent. Certain features of app updates you don't get because of your Android operating system version. And so it feels like, in some ways, I just have that tablet with a Braille display. Now, in others, it's definitely not like that, but it can be really frustrating.
So why is it that your particular tablet can't be upgraded to the latest Android?
That tablet has kind of been end of life. It was a fairly inexpensive tablet. It doesn't support 64-bit apps. It's a 32-bit tablet, and so it can't come up any further.
Because I am no Android expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I hear a lot of people say, for whatever reason, my device either can't be or hasn't been upgraded to the latest. Maybe the carrier, if it's a phone, hasn't allowed that or hasn't done it. But it seems like there's a lot of confusion about how to get these devices to run the latest version of the operating system.
Right. And the thing with that is that you're waiting on several folks. You know, Google releases an update, but you don't always get it if you don't have a Google device. It has to run through, say, Samsung. In my case, Samsung would have to release the update to us. But even for phones, you have one more step to go through, and that's the carrier. So it's very fragmented, and the experience that you get can be really fragmented. And there's so many different Android devices running so many different operating systems.
Yep.
And I think I heard on a podcast the other day that some percentage of folks are still using Gingerbread.
It was a pretty significant percentage. I think I might have heard the same one. And a very small percentage of people are on the newest, I think it's Oreo update. I think it's in the single digits still. I know even with my Samsung Galaxy S8 phone that I got for playing with Android, it's still a version behind. Now it's in beta. Oreo is in beta. So eventually I'll get it. But it seems crazy that whether you pay $400 for a flagship phone or $6,000 for a Braille device running Android, that you can't get the very latest and greatest that the operating system has to offer. That's a frustrating thing.
I have not kept up well with Android, so the two of you might be able to educate me a little bit here. When I was testing Android for this podcast a long time ago, I was using, I think they called it a Nexus 7. Was that a thing?
Yes. That was end of life quite a while back.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I found that the editors did not work very well with Access technology. But it worries me that is still a problem with Android, and it's perhaps one of the reasons that I'm having these problems with word processing on the Polaris. But I hope that's not the case. I hope it's not that Android and Access technology just don't play well when it comes to editing.
I don't think that's so true anymore. I have some experience with a device running Nougat, and that it seems to me that after Marshmallow, there were some serious accessibility improvements starting, even in Lollipop, there were some, but even we were talking Marshmallow, Nougat, and even now Oreo, you're seeing some significant accessibility improvements where the, I would say a device running any of those three operating systems is a serious competitor with iOS and VoiceOver.
I agree, especially with improvements to TalkBack and also the built-in extra gestures on the Samsung screen readers. I would say that now it's not a question of I have to get an iPhone because it's the only one that's really accessible. I'd say that now it's definitely a matter of just choose the operating system that you want because the accessibility experience is going to be fairly similar as long as you don't necessarily rely a whole lot on Braille on the Android side because Brailleback still has leaves a lot to be desired. I haven't even really bothered with it because everyone has said that it's such a pile. So I've not even hooked my Vario to my Samsung yet because I haven't seen a need.
Me either. And the one thing that I really wish Android would work on would be the two-finger double, similar to a two-finger double tap gesture.
Samsung has that, and it has changed everything about how I think about Android.
I need to play with this now.
Yes, you do. I was testing a Google Pixel device, and that is the one thing that really kept me from embracing it more fully was the lack of magic tap. And then I got this Galaxy S8, thanks to some podcasts that Jonathan Mosen did on The Blind Side, where he gave a very thorough overview of some of the features of the Galaxy S8 with magic tap. It just changes everything and really a strong, worthy competitor now.
If you're looking for a really cheap, mostly Android experience, the Fire tablets just got a really big update that have the two-finger double tap gesture and the three-finger swipe gestures as well as many others.
That's right.
So it's starting to get there, but TalkBack certainly doesn't have it.
I do like the strides that have been made with the Fire tablet because, like you say, it's a great, really, really inexpensive way to get an accessible device. I still do not like, though, when you're adjusting granularity, you have to double tap and hold and then draw a circle. I hate the jog wheel. I hate it. I want to throw my tablet anytime I have to use it. Me neither. With Voice Assistant, you just use, you know, three-finger gestures to adjust granularity. And in iOS, obviously, you have the rotor, both of which I think are much better options. And then, of course, in regular TalkBack, you just use one finger up and down to adjust granularity. My thought at first was that, okay, well, this would be the Fire tablet would be really good for an older person who's gone blind and just wants to be able to do a couple of things.
No.
But the jog wheel makes it a showstopper for me and would for grandma too, I would think.
Yeah.
If it ain't good for you, it's probably not good for
grandma. Good for grandma, yeah.
From what you all are telling me, at least your feeling is that accessibility was not that great with Lollipop and KitKat, and that it's gotten better in
so
recent
better.
Iterations yes. of Android. My $6,000 Polaris isn't running one of those later iterations. So what does that mean in terms of its ability to work well with accessibility? And that's troubling to me, honestly.
It means you spent $6,000 on something that unfortunately is very limited by the operating system they've chosen to put on it.
Well, and here's my unfortunate speculation, is that HumanWare and HIMS, you know, they built these note takers, they put Android in them to make things like web browser and email more usable and faster, but I'm not so sure that the focus was placed on third-party apps because most people that buy note takers want them for the very walled experience of the built-in word processor, email, internet browser, those things. But they want those things to run really smoothly and quickly. And most of the time they do, especially on the touch, the word processing experience is pretty nice. But unfortunately, I think that not a lot of focus was given to the way third-party apps interact with the device.
What kind of files can you save and work with in the word processor on the Braille Note Touch, and how much can you do with them as far as if you need to send them to someone else, like if it's a Word compatible document, how does that work out if you need to send it to if turn it in for an assignment or something like that?
For me, on the Touch, you edit and save mainly in DocX format, which is really nice. No more proprietary format. And I think that's really a winner for this device. And You can read PDFs. I'm pretty sure you can read PowerPoints as well. I'm going to be putting that to the test this quarter.
Him sort of got themselves in an interesting pickle, I think, because what they did to make the U2 so attractive is they wrote a lot of these little applets that would do things like give you a really nice interface to Google search, connect you to Dropbox, give you access to Bookshare, do things like that. And these little applets were beautiful. I mean, they were just easy to use. They didn't have any clutter in them. You did a Google search. You just got the information that you wanted. It was really nice. But the problem was it was really hard to keep these applets running. Every time Google would change something or Dropbox would change something or something would get changed on the web, the app would be broken and Hims would have to fix it. They couldn't continue down that road because it was just not viable, especially trying to make these things work in Windows CE. So they had to do something. They had to, and they probably did have to go to Android. But now the problem is they're not going to write all these little applets for Google search and Bookshare and Dropbox. Now they're going to say, go to the Google Play Store and download the Android Dropbox app. And you can do that, but you have lost the simplicity that you're talking about, Aaliyah, that a lot of people look for in a note taker. Now they got to figure out Dropbox on Android with Access technology, which is doable. It's more geeky than what was done on the U2 for Dropbox.
I feel like you have to be a little more tech savvy to work with some of these. And that's not to say that somebody who's not couldn't work with it. But once you get past the main menu apps on the touch, you know, word processor and those things like that, once you get past those things and want to go further, you might be in a little bit of trouble because you need to know how to troubleshoot and you need to know how to work with things that are a little quirky because now we're working with the mainstream. And in some cases, I think this is a good thing that people are kind of being forced to deal with mainstream stuff and they're having to learn to problem solve a little bit more. But in other ways, some people may not like it.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It's unavoidable. If people are going to use modern mobile applications, they're going to have to delve in some form to either probably Android or iOS, and they're going to have to delve into whatever accessibility strategies they need to use if they have a disability. I've said some things today that I'm really struggling with the Polaris, but even all that said, I really like this device and I love using Braille. I almost 99% of the time use it with speech turned off. And so I'm like you, Allison, if I didn't have speech, I'd probably miss it, but I don't use it very often. I have high hopes, honestly, for this device. I think the Polaris can become a really great next generation device, but in my experience right now, there's still work to be done, and that's okay. Nobody forced me to buy it. I bought one of the first ones that came available. I'm an early adopter on this product, and so I'm going through some growing pains with it. And part of that, you know, is by my choice. But I think there's real potential here. But the question is, can we get there? And would you say the same thing about the Braille Note Touch?
I do. And I think Humanware is starting to really push some things that are great, but I think there's some other things that need worked on. For example, there's a graphing features coming to the touch and that are in beta right now, but there are some real issues with the interface and the fact that it's running an older version of Android that are unavoidable. And I hope we don't get stuck in the same situation we were in with the Braille Note Empower and Apex, where it was running such an old version of Windows that you couldn't get any sort of apps for them anyway, but if you'd wanted to, nobody was developing stuff for that anymore. You couldn't access web pages with it because it was too old, and I really hope that we don't get in that situation with these devices.
Well, what do you think, Allison? What are you left with after hearing all this?
I'm going to wait, I think, or I know that the L Braille is another option with that runs Windows. I'm not sure I want to go down that road. I may look into buying a second Vario Ultra because for the types of things that Jeremy and I tend to use this device for, it might be as good a solution separately for both of us. So I've got some thinking to do. I know that there are some other Braille displays now that have some smart features built in. there's some note taking in the new Focus. There's a one of the Brilliance, the smaller one, the 14, can sync with Microsoft Exchange, which sounds a little bit intriguing, but I really like the Vario. So I don't know if we both do. So I don't know if either one of us would want to give that up. So
yeah,
Baum might be getting some more of our money. So maybe that'll help them.
Your point's well taken though. These decisions, because of all the pros and cons, are really hard to make.
They are. Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that these are very expensive devices, and it's not like buying an Android tablet you can experiment with. You spent $60 on it and it didn't work out so well, so what? Mm-hmm. It's nothing like that with these Braille devices. And so what's going to happen from here? You know, I mean, it's a really interesting dilemma for users and these companies, I think, to be in, honestly. It's perplexing right now.
Yeah, we're in kind of a weird time where, you know, mainstream is definitely becoming king, but these Braille devices are kind of being largely left out in the cold.
Yeah, but in my job, there are things that I just can do so much better and so much more efficiently with Braille that I was willing to pay the big bucks to have that access.
I had to give a presentation recently, and it was a very, very long presentation. And I had all of my notes on my Vario, and I was able just very fluidly to go through those notes and to give my presentation. And I think I even tweeted about it. It's not something that I could have done without Braille. I know people talk about you can have an earphone in and listen to little lines of speech and do it that way, but I would not have been able to present at the caliber that I presented for the length of time that I presented without having Braille notes in front of me.
Yeah. And how do you put a price tag on that?
You can't.
What about you, Aaliyah, kind of coming at it from the student perspective? Obviously, you wouldn't have chosen to get one of these Braille devices if you didn't think it was important, but maybe it's particularly important as a student.
Yeah,
I think so, because as many times as I've tried to take notes in class with an iPhone and a Braille display, or my iPad and a Braille display, or even sometimes my iPad and a Bluetooth keyboard, the thing is that Bluetooth just is not as reliable as a single device, and you've got to think about that. You know, if you are in class and your phone locks up or your iPad locks up and the Braille display disconnects, that's happened to me a million times. And then I have to pull out earbuds. I have to connect them. I have to unlock my phone and get to settings, repair the display. By that time, I've lost maybe a minute or two of notes, and that can be critical in the college environment.
Yep.
These companies are going to have to, I hope, really step up to the plate. And surely they're being pushed, at least to some degree, by the success of mainstream devices. But that said, I think we're also saying to them in so many words, we need these Braille devices. We need you all to make them work at the standard of the other mobile type interfaces that are available, because this is really important and students need it. Professionals need it. We are seriously asking for the bar to be raised and for this to move forward, just like the other aspects of iOS and Android are moving forward. And I'm really hopeful that it's going to happen.
Same here.
That's about all I really have to say at this point about these devices. How about you, Aaliyah? Any thoughts you want to make sure to finish off with?
I think we focused on a lot of negative points, but I want to say that these aren't bad devices overall. They wouldn't be being sold in such high volume if they were. Do they have bugs? Yes. But I think the important thing to say is that these devices are not horrible, and it's they're still a good solution. Would I buy an Apex, which are still being sold, as opposed to buying a Touch? No, absolutely not. That's not a wise decision necessarily. But, you know, some people may think that after hearing this podcast, well, I'll just stick with the old stuff. Well, the new stuff has far more room for improvement than the old stuff ever did.
I agree 100%. I would not buy one of the older models of the HIMSS YouTube, even though it's a great device. And in some ways, it's more mature at this moment than the Polaris is, but it's near the end of its capabilities for advancement. And that's exactly why I think HIMSS had to move forward to the Polaris. And I have very high hopes for the Polaris. I use it every day, and I think you're absolutely right. I want to agree with what you said about these devices are useful. They are worthwhile. They do offer an interface to the world of Braille that no other devices offer in the way that they offer them. And so even though I am seriously wanting some of these bugs to be fixed, because some of them are pretty troubling and pretty inconvenient, I'm very hopeful for the future of the Braille Sense Polaris. I love it. I love the way they designed the hardware. I think they were right to design the software in such a way that they have some of their old familiar applications, as well as to offer people the opportunity for Android applications. I think it was the right move, and I think it's going to get there.
And going off of what you're talking about, as frustrated as I can sometimes be by the closed nature of my Vario, I love the fact that it does what it does really well. I love the fact that, you know, I can hook it to my iPhone and use Dropbox and read Kindle books and read iBooks and go browse the web and do everything that I want to do with Braille. So, you know, there are pros and cons no matter what you choose. I would just say that it's really a matter of what you want to accomplish, and don't necessarily let any of the experiences that we have had influence the decision that you might make. Base it more on the types of things that you need to do, and will whatever device you're thinking of allow you to accomplish that.
Don't be afraid to try them out and find a way to work with them, at least for a little while. I mean, I think most of the companies have sales representatives all over the country, and most of them will find a way to help a person learn about their product. And there's no substitute for putting your hands on it.
It's true.
All right. Well, I think we have covered this to the extent that I'm willing and able to do it at this point. So first of all, I want to really thank you, Aaliyah, for taking all this time with us and for telling us about your experience with the Braille Not Touch.
Sure. It was great to be here.
I'm just going to say, this is Robert, one of the tech doctors, and I will say so long for now.
And this is Allison, the other tech doctor, saying bye, everyone.